Hello, everybody, and welcome. This is Lizzie and Justin. We are from Third Space, and this is Turning Towards Life, our 330-somethingth week together. So welcome, Lizzie. I'm so happy to be here with you this morning, and I feel that every Sunday morning, and this is 330-something of them. So it's a lovely delight to be doing this with you again, and for it to be such a life-giving conversation, life-giving practice, which I know is one of the reasons why we started this years and years ago, was to be in a life-giving conversation and then make it available to the world. So thank you, Lizzie, and thank you, everybody, all of you who are here with us. We know that you join us from across the world, different time zones, in lots of different ways, on podcasts and YouTube and live in our Facebook group and Spotify and who knows what else. So thank you for joining us whenever and from when wherever you do. It's really something to feel that this conversation, Lizzie, is really at the heart of a kind of community. And it's very good to have you all with us indeed. You can, if you find that you would like to, you can be in contact with us. One place is just to comment in Facebook. If you're there, find your way to our group, and then you can speak with us and other people there. You can also email us, hello@turningtowards.life, or Lizzie or Justin at. And these days you can support us. You can metaphorically buy us a coffee if you go to turningtowards.life, which is where all the conversations are, and find the support us button. You can join in with helping us to sustain this wonderful and life-giving and very meaningful project. And the only other thing I want to say is this is a Third Space conversation, and we at Third Space are gearing up for our next year of our year-long professional coaching course, which is a wonder of a thing. I'm saying this in March, and it begins in the summer, June or July, and today I can't remember which one of those it is. I think it might be June. And the joyful thing is it's filling up. And if you're interested at all in any of that side of things that we do, please head over to wearethirdspace.org and take a look. There's lots to see there. And that's it. I'll stop now, Lizzie, and say hello to you. Give you a chance to come in.
Thanks, Justin. Welcome, everybody. And thank you for being here with us. As Justin said, such a joy that we're in this kind of community. I was just imagining, Justin, if somebody met somebody else and both of them listened to Turning Towards Life, there would immediately be a kind of conversation that isn't ordinarily available to us. If two people met randomly in the world and discovered they both listened, it would open up immediately into a different kind of conversation. And I'm just appreciating when you said the word community, I thought, oh yeah, people might talk to each other about this. And how brilliant would that be? So anyway, here we go. This is a poem by William Stafford called The Way It Is. And we're going to read it as we usually do and see where the thread takes us today. So The Way It Is by William Stafford. There's a thread you follow. It goes among things that change, but it doesn't change. People wonder about what you're pursuing. You have to explain about the thread, but it's hard for others to see. While you hold it, you can't get lost. Tragedies happen, people get hurt or die, and you suffer and get old. Nothing you do can stop time's unfolding. You don't ever let go of the thread.
Thanks, Lizzie. Sometimes when we're reading these sources, we say what I'm about to say now, which is maybe if you're listening to us and you're in the midst of something, don't do this if you're driving the car. You might want to just take a breath and close your eyes and let yourself soften a little bit, because hearing a source, a poem, something that someone's written from this place is different from if you're in the middle of being up to something. So you're very welcome to take a breath along with me and Lizzie. This is The Way It Is by William Stafford. There's a thread you follow. It goes among things that change, but it doesn't change. People wonder about what you are pursuing. You have to explain about the thread, but it is hard for others to see. While you hold it, you can't get lost. Tragedies happen. People get hurt or die, and you suffer and get old. Nothing you can do can stop time's unfolding. You don't ever let go of the thread.
Justin. So I feel like I wrote this poem by William Stafford, Justin, as a kind of challenge, because I don't know how to speak about the thread, but I know what it's talking about. So when it says you have to explain about the thread, I feel like that's one of the things I am least good at, is explaining about the thread that I experience. So I thought if I brought this here, maybe something could get born of language, who knows, about threadness. And one of my favorite bits of the poem is, you don't ever let go of the thread, which says to me, like, it's not like I have a choice about that. It's just, it doesn't happen. It's not possible to let go of the thread. So whatever I, however far I feel I veered off the course of what I should be doing with my life, I can't let go of it. And it's true. That feels true to me, that there's no, it's not an optional thing. There's a something that is a given. And as things change, it doesn't change. And I can't, like, I don't let go of it. It's not, I can't let go of it. It's, I don't let go of it. And I feel very mystified and kind of seen by this poem, but unable to really say much about it. So I'm really curious as to what's there and what's here in the moment where we are, by gathering, Justin, we're an affordance, we're an invitation to finding language for this. And I'm grateful for that opportunity today.
A similar thought about this last line. Lizzie, I've been, ever since I first heard this poem. Such an intriguing thing, isn't it? There's a thread you follow. It doesn't change, and people wonder about it, and it's hard to see. And while you hold it, you can't get lost. Which does make it sound like, to a certain extent, William Stafford is saying to us, please hold it. Because if you hold this thread, you can't get lost in the midst of all the tragedies, inevitably, and people getting hurt and dying, and you suffering and getting old. Please hold on to the thread, because if you hold it, you can't get lost. He says, nothing you can do can stop time's unfolding. So much of what the way life goes isn't our choice, even though there's choice in the middle of it. And I am very intrigued then by this language of, you don't ever let go of the thread, because he could have written, you can't ever let go of the thread, which he didn't write. But what he did write is, you don't ever let go of the thread. And I'm really with you that there's some sense in it, at least it seems to me, that whatever we do, we don't let go of the thread, even when we think we've let go of the thread. And yet somehow it might be possible to imagine letting go of it. So it's very confusing. And as I was thinking about it a little bit this morning, I thought, so what if I tried to find language for this thread that runs through our lives, that's hard to explain to other people, we can never really explain to other people, that doesn't change, what language would I give for it? If it wasn't thread, what might it mean? And I realized that there were probably thousands of things to say about this. The one I wanted to start with, which can only be part of the picture, is breath. Seemed to me, if I said, your breath goes always among everything that changes, but it doesn't really change. And it's hard to explain what your own breath is really like because only I have my breath and you have your breath. And it might be the same and it might not be. And while I hold on to my breath, I can't get lost in the middle of everything. Everything's happening. And I don't, whilst I'm alive, ever let go of it. So that seemed like a starting point. And then it was clear to me that's not all of it. But to start to see that breath is one of the things that's like the thing that William Stafford is talking about that goes among everything that changes. Which is why practices that return us to our breath seem to me to be so powerful. They sound so trivial. Oh, just attend to your breath or bring your attention to your breath. But if you look at it the way William Stafford's writing about it, it's not trivial at all. It's the line that runs through every single thing from the start to the end of our lives.
Oh, I'm just seeing if I can take this invitation to find language as well for myself, Justin, and the threadness that I can feel is something to do with connection for me. There's something to do with connection to myself and others, where I feel like tragedies happen, people get hurt or die, and you suffer and get old. When I let that close, it feels like if I just followed the thread of connection, I would exist through it somehow. But also, I'm really struck by the word thread all of a sudden. Like, you can't hold a thread with your whole hand. You can't wrap your arms around it. It's like between your fingers, you could feel a thread. That's how delicate this line that we're talking about is. And it's also not to be. It's funny, like it's not to be messed with either. Like you need to handle a thread with care and tenderness and sensitivity and awareness. Like it needs to be not roughed around. And yet it's probably also sitting in a corner somewhere and not even being noticed for lots of the time. So I'm feeling very grateful and moved by the presence of the thread of our lives, whatever that is made up of, because of the nature of it and because of how maybe unexpecting it is and ever present it is, that we might always have the chance to return to it if we wanted to. And so when I think of the very, very precious thing between humans to be able to connect with one another and to be with one another in each other's grief and difficulty and joy and wonder and all the things, that kind of togetherness. And of course, with one's own self as well. Like I know I can be so far from myself, like completely out to lunch, and then I can come home and know myself a little more, or feel my feelings, or be in my body, be in my relationships more presently, more kindly, warmly. And the, what's the word? The settling returns. The settling comes back in amidst all kinds of kerfuffleage. And I'm feeling really moved by it, actually, like it's an ever-present invitation that doesn't demand anything of me at all, because it's just waiting.
Such helpful language, Lizzie, your language about it's waiting and it doesn't expect anything of us. and yet it runs through. And you talked about a couple of different ways of running life through, like running through our lives and running between us as well. It's something to do with connection, because that's what threads do, is they join one something to another something. That's what a thread does. So the sense that there's something quiet in the heart of things that connects up everything, that unifies everything, that's right there waiting, that we can return to. Or maybe if I take William Stafford's language very closely, we don't ever have to return to it, because it never went anywhere. It never was far. We were never far from it. But we might be helpful to remember, or to remember to turn to see it, or to feel our closeness to it when we've forgotten. That's so helpful, and it seems very true to me. I've been thinking a lot over these last few days, a couple of things. So one is, in my hallway, we've got, you might have seen this sometime, but there's a wall of family photos on our hallways. We come in, and there's a one at the top, which is of me when I was about 1.5. I'm pretty sure you've seen that photo. And then there's another one of me when I was about 11. And now I'm 53, and I often walk into the hall and I wonder about those two little ones, who are me, and also how different I am from them in so many ways, what I feel, what I care about, what I think about, what I'm up to in my life. And yet they're also indivisibly me. And there's the thread. There's absolutely a something there that unifies those three people in a way that no other people are connected in that way. So I've been thinking about it that way. And then I've also been thinking this week, I'm in the middle of a very, very confusing situation where I'm leading something very important that impacts a very large number of people. And there are a lot of different opinions around about what the right thing to do is, and how to decisions should be made, and what kind of decisions should be made. And I have found myself feeling thrown this way and that way in the midst of it as I listen to different people. And one day I'll feel very strongly one way, and then I'll listen to some other people I trust, and they'll have a different view, and I'll feel another way. And sometimes those different feelings are just inside me, and sometimes I've said them to other people. So one day I'll say to a group of people, well, I really think this, and then a few days later I'm saying to them, well, I've thought about it, and listen, now I really think this. And then a few days later I'm back again where I started. So I feel like I'm moving and moving and moving, and it must be very confusing to other people, because it's definitely very confusing to me that all of this is happening, that I can't quite find my solid ground in it. So then hearing the way that you talk about the thread is incredibly helpful, because it really feels true that there's a thread that I'm following, and it goes among all of this change, including all the ways I keep changing. And it doesn't change, and people really are wondering about what I'm pursuing. I think I must be quite unintelligible to quite a lot of people at the moment, because I am myself. But if I give up being hard on myself about how confused I am and how confusing it has been, and instead remember what you said about this quiet line that runs through, that I'm never really very far from, if I let myself do what you said, it doesn't resolve. Actually, it does go some way to resolving how changeable I feel. It does help settle the parts of me that panic about what am I doing. And I think the panicky parts of me tend to swing me more towards one end or the other and back again. Helps me find my center. And I realize in saying I don't even really have to know what the thread is. All that matters is to know that there's a thread there and to trust it. And I don't have to have language. I have to explain about the thread, even to myself. I can't. If I really let myself trust that, then it's a kind of trusting life. And I can go, okay, a lot is changing, but in the heart of it is something that doesn't change. And that means I don't have to worry as much as I do. Because close by, there's always a like a lifeline. It never went anywhere. And it won't go anywhere, even when I suffer and get old and tragedies happen and people get hurt or die, which are terrifically disorientating events for any of us. So maybe that's what I'm discovering in this part of our conversation, is that remembering that even in the midst of our biggest disorientation, when we can't figure out how we got to be the person that we are today, and we don't even really know what we're standing on, how valuable it is to remember that our lives never left us. Maybe that's one way of saying it. The thread of our lives is right here. I can like feel it running close to my face almost, like I just have to look out of the corner of my eye and there it is. There's a kind of necessary rescue in that, I think, when the jumpy, panicky, frightened parts of me kick off and flail around. There's a place to rest in the middle of it somehow.
So you're talking, Justin. First of all, I'm so moved by the thing you said about the thread, that the purpose of a thread is to connect things together and sew things together. It's really beautiful. Other piece of understanding about the word thread for me. And as you were talking, this is a kind of vague memory of mine. And I was much younger, I think traveling somewhere, and we did caving. And I think it was caving or like potholing or something, but it was in very small, some sections of the path were very small. It was completely dark. And on some places there were, you had to lie on your back, and there was like the distance between the water and the ceiling was where you had to keep your mouth and nose so that you could breathe. And that if you were passing through a small piece of the tunnel kind of thing. And I can't even remember exactly where I was, which it kind of speaks to this whole thing, actually, and now I'm saying it. I can't remember who I was with, what the circumstances were, why I was doing it. I think it was like an activity or something that I was just kind of rolling along with, because that's what you did. And I was really afraid. I was really afraid. So I remember the fear. I remember the small spaces. I remember having to like seriously regulate myself to be able to do the activity that we were doing. And the thing I remember, which is coming back as you're talking, is that there was this rope on the side, which I could hold onto it with my hand if I needed to feel more safe, which is really wonderful. Like it's one way of being in contact with the thread, the rope. But the other way I was connected was that I had a harness on and I was connected to it anyway. Like I had a little clip that clipped me to it, so I couldn't stray that far from the rope. The rope moved, but I couldn't go that far from it. So I think why this is returning to me is that I was connected anyway, but the way that my body and my experience felt safe was that I could put my hand on it, but I could always put my hand on it because it was connected already to my body. And as I was going through this really scary thing, I remember feeling disorientated and then grasping it again. So even in the knowledge that I was attached to it anyway, my kind of human grounded personality person of me needed to put my hand on it to kind of consciously know that I was attached to it, even though unconsciously it was always there, the rope was always there. And how much comfort that brings, and how much connection that brings, and how much kind of, okay, so like ground, I'm all right. I've got my hand on this thing. I can feel it in my fingertips. There's sensation here. I know how to do that. And when you said, what are the practices that enable me, and maybe our breath is one of them, enable me to kind of put my hand on that thread, that suddenly feels very important to know how to reach for it, So the givenness is one profound piece of deep comfort, that it will be there if I reach for it. But then the next part is reaching for it. And what do I do to reach for this thread? And how might each of us define the thread differently, which may change from day to day, the way that we language it, but the sense of it, the truth of it doesn't go anywhere. So I'm feeling very invited into the wondering of what might be, firstly, the way I would articulate the thread, which we've kind of, I've managed to begin with this connection thing, and what you said about the thread connecting pieces of material and connecting things up is really certainly a big part of the thread for me. So articulating it for myself, and then wondering what it is that I do, what action I take, what practice I have, what reflection I have, what activity I might get up to that has me reach my hand for that rope that is attached to me and is attached to the path. It's attached to both, and which I can hold on to and find physical sensation and actual bodily comfort from in the moments where I'm in a big dark cavern, or I'm in a very small space, or I'm feeling like I've lost everybody else on the trail. What do I do to have my hand back on that thing so that I know that everything is okay? Like I'm okay, essentially. There's an okayness that I can reach for in amongst the confusion and the disorientation.
This image of you caving with this rope already there is so striking, Lizzie, to me. And I'm just picking up on the thing that you just said, which is there's something really to be said for wondering about the practices that help us reach out for the rope, to put our hand on the rope when it's called for, so that we know that at some essential level, we're okay right in the midst of the things that change. And maybe for each of us, there's a bit of thinking to do about what is that? And it might be breath, and for me it's swimming, for example, for sure. Then your caving image also drew me back to something in the poem that we haven't talked about, which is where it begins. There's a thread you follow. We've been talking a lot about the knowing, the essential something that runs through everything that we can reach for. But what we haven't said anything about, really, is that we're following it. That one of the things that it does, whatever this is it joins up a life, it unifies a life in some way. When you're caving and you've never been through that bit of cave before, you know to reach out for the rope and it gives you a sense of stability. Oh, there it is. But it's also going on through time. There's a thread you follow and it goes among things that change and it doesn't change, and people wonder about what you're pursuing. And then I want to think, and we wonder what we're pursuing often. We don't know what we're pursuing. And it's hard for everyone to see, but you don't ever let go of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we have the vantage point of looking back at the past, I might be able to find language about the thread that leads from the 2-year-old to the 11-year-old to the 53-year-old, and then on into whatever future awaits, which is unknowable. And looking back that way can be a source of great, I'm finding now just talking to you, a source of great ground, which is, say, whatever comes next in the world, in me, there's a thread that I'm following. There's a place to look back and see how it all is joined up into something. I may not ever have language for what it is, but just knowing that I could never let go of it. And that the only other thing I want to say about it is, when we read a poem like this and it says there's a thread you follow, it might sound, Lizzie, that it's about you or it's about me, but it's about everyone. This is true for all of us. And we all have our individual threads, and we also have the threads that are in between us. So there's a thread that runs in between, in the friendship between you and I, Lizzie, that maybe is its own thread.
Mm-hmm.
And it has its own history and its own future and its own, we can reach for that thread too. Like the you that William Stafford is writing about might not just be a person. It might be a you that's you and I, or a you that's the communities that we're in.
Yeah.
And somehow that, we won't have time for it today, but somehow it seems to me that that opens this up into a whole wide field about the threads that run among the things that change that are on the in-between of us, not just mine and not just yours.
Mm. That's really beautiful, Justin. And again, it brings me back to the community of Turning Towards Life and Third Space. And there are so many threads that connect people who are connected with us. There's such a wonderful sense of togetherness that I know is out there, where people can connect through these conversations and the kind of work that we all get to do together when we all gather. I'm so grateful for that being out there that we can't see, but we know exists, which we can reach for if we also want to, and we do regularly. So I want to thank you, Justin, for this, and for this kind of very centering and grounding sense of essentialness that's come forth in this conversation. It's really beautiful for me. And thank you, everybody, for wondering about this yourselves. Thank you, William Stafford, for this poem existing in our world. It's really beautiful. And we'll be back next Sunday with A Source Chosen by Justin. And we will see you then.
Hey, everyone.